You know, when you picture building a life, you usually picture a permanent foundation, like concrete poured deep into the earth, something that stays put. But today's deep dive into the source material on a Saskatchewan prairie homesteader named George Leroux, who was born in 1891, well, it kind of flips that idea upside down.
It really does. His life is this brutal, just fascinating window into what happens when raw frontier survival suddenly smashes into the mechanized modern world.
Right. And to get a sense of George's world, you really have to look at how he handled that whole idea of a permanent foundation.
Exactly. I mean, he built a log frame house, but his first wife, Emilienne, was a teacher, and their homestead was just way too far from her school.
Okay, so what does he do?
Well, George actually traded land with his parents and physically dragged his entire house across the prairie.
Wait, hold on. Dragged a house. With what?
Just horses and wagons. He did all of that just to support her career.
That is wild. We always hear the myth of the, rugged individualist pioneer conquering the land by himself, but swapping land with your parents and moving a house, that sounds completely dependent on a tight community safety net.
Oh, yeah. That safety net was the only infrastructure they had. And sadly, it was tested severely. In 1919, Emilienne passed away from a blood clot just 10 days after giving birth.
Oh, man, that is heartbreaking.
Yeah, the family just shattered. The older boys went to live with one family, the newborn went to George's brother. It actually took George marrying Emilienne's sister, Sophronie, in 1920 to finally pull all those children back under one roof.
The contrast there is just staggering to me. Like, he had the physical strength to drag a log cabin across the dirt, but putting a fractured family back together required an entirely different kind of heavy lifting.
It did. And, the physical demands were relentless too, especially during the winters. Emotional survival relied on family, but keeping them fed meant George had to hunt coyotes out on the open freezing range.
Right. The sources mention he used a runabout sled.
Yeah, which was literally just a wooden box sitting on two by 10 wooden runners.
I can't even imagine the cold. He's out there hiding under a horse blanket, whispering to his dogs so the coyotes don't bolt.
Exactly. He would wait until they were incredibly close, throw off the blanket, and just shout at the dogs to go. And he didn't use just any dogs either.
Right, it was like a modern tactical strike team.
Basically, yeah, he had a runner dog with these 3-foot-long legs that would sprint out and bite the coyote's hind legs solely to slow it down.
And then his second dog, the killer dog, moves in to finish it.
You got it. He'd be racing blindly across the frozen prairie in a wooden box, snapping sled runners, freezing.
The adrenaline and danger are terrifying. But he'd bring back, what, maybe 100 pelts by spring?
Around that, yeah. And knowing that grueling, bone-chilling reality really explains why farmers were so desperate to adopt anything that made life easier.
Oh, for sure.
By 1927, George swaps the horses for a Twin City tractor with massive steel wheels. And then a year later, he buys a sleek 1928 Plymouth.
Wait, from a wooden box on runners to a Plymouth? That is serious whiplash.
It is, but the real shock came in 1940 with a rubber-tired tractor. Those old steel wheels practically shook a farmer to pieces and heavily compacted the soil.
Ah, so rubber tires absorb the shock. It was a biological relief just as much as a technological one.
Exactly. They retired the steel-wheeled tractor on the spot.
But jumping into the modern world like that, it has to come with a catch, right?
It did, especially when dealing with modern economics. During World War II, global demand spiked and wheat hit an unbelievable $1.50 per bushel.
Wow.
But as the war economy shifted and global markets stabilized, that price started dropping a few pennies a day. George held off selling, convinced the market would bounce back.
Oof, the classic trap of trying to time the market. You get anchored to that high number.
Right. He watched the price plummet until he was cornered, eventually selling at just 35 cents.
That is such a profound shift. The biggest threat to their survival was no longer a blizzard or a pack of coyotes. It was invisible global market forces. Buying that Plymouth might have felt like taming the world, but they really just traded natural vulnerabilities for economic ones.
And that loss of control echoes into George's later years, too. In 1946, at just 55 years old, right on the verge of finally paying off the ranch, he suffered a paralyzing stroke.
A man whose entire identity was forged by intense physical labor suddenly bedridden for the next 32 years.
32 years, yeah. But the sources highlight that he didn't just fade away, he was surrounded by the family he fought so hard to reunite.
His home remained the center of local dances and card games. He stayed the anchor.
He couldn't tame the land anymore, but the home he built continued to thrive around him.
Which leaves you with something to ponder. We look at George's life, the broken sled runners, the heavy lifting, the grit, and compare it to our lives today, wrapped in all our rubber-tired comforts and modern conveniences. Have those conveniences insulated us so much that we've lost that specific type of raw human resilience George had to forge out on the prairie?